comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. You know, one of the most important things about this show is the fact that each and every show, you matter. And, you know, if you didn't matter, we'd be just like a whole bunch of the other shows out there, right? But you do matter, and it matters to us that you send to us various suggestions that we incorporate into the show's planning. One of the suggestions that I have received quite a number of times, actually, over the past few weeks is that we do more shows about paranormal things. And I've gotten that from several people. There are more people, I suppose, that think paranormal things are real. I hate to use the term, but they believe in the paranormal. There are more people in that category than there are in the category that have seen UFOs or that think UFOs are real. But both categories are sizable. In fact, both are the majority. Well, polls that have been conducted over the past few years show by far that the majority of people in North America think, and also in the UK, think that things paranormal are real. Some of the most popular television shows have to do with the paranormal, as you know. And I guess the granddaddy of them all would be Ghost Hunters, simply because I think they were probably the first ones out there. But tons and tons of television shows and made-for-television movies and television series all have to do with the paranormal. People are really interested in that. But is there any real evidence that it's genuine? Is there any real evidence that spirits exist and that they survive after, that the human spirit survives after physical death? Is there any real evidence of that? Well, my guest tonight is someone who says yes, and quite possibly is the person who has captured that evidence on video. It's quite an amazing story. His name is Mark Cowden, and he's going to join us on the other side of the break that is coming up. Let me encourage you, if you haven't subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that. It's our free weekly newsletter, and it's really free, no strings attached. And so, my dear friends, if you have not yet subscribed, be sure you do, all right? You do that by going over to my website and just look for the link that says K-Files, and you'll see it. Just click that. It asks for, it's a big, big question. It's a tough question. It asks for your email address. And we don't share it with anybody. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is, as I said, Mark Cowden. Let me tell you how this all came about. First, I've been getting a few emails from people saying, you know, we love the shows you do on paranormal things, and we'd love for you to do more. Then I got an email from Mark Cowden. Now, I'm not going to read all of it to you, but let me read part of it to you. This is how this show came about. Hello, my name is Mark Cowden. I'm a cast member in the BBC TV show Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts. Tuesday night's episode, our finale of our program, showed what is believed to be a worldwide first, which happened in Northern Ireland. For the first time ever, television cameras documented a live conversation recorded between a living and not-so-living person. I am the person who made that recording. As it aired Tuesday evening, the press embargo has been lifted, and I can tell you all about it and provide you with photos and video. The story is yours if you want it. Mark Cowden, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin? It's great to be on with you.
Well, it's going very well, and it's great to have you here. Now, Mark, you are in the UK. Where about are you in the UK?
At the minute, I am in a frozen Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Okay. And it's just after 3 o'clock in the morning there, I presume?
It is indeed, yes. This brings back memories of all-night ghost hunts.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get into some of those. Let's talk about your career and your path that has taken you to Northern Ireland, because you're a filmmaker. You started out here in the United States, and as a matter of fact, now I don't know how accurate this list is because I got it off of the internet, and who knows when you get something off the internet how accurate something is. But I got a list of a few of the films that you have worked on. Some of them are television movies. One of them that's listed here is Master Spy, the Robert Hansen story.
Right. I think that's actually a different Mark Cowden.
Somebody handed me the wrong list.
That's the problem I have with the internet. There's two people named Mark Cowden.
You know what? I have the same problem because there's a film maker by the name of Kevin Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, he got bumped off of a flight because the airline said he was too large, and made big news over here. And I started getting emails from people telling me I needed to lose weight. You know, I just forwarded them on to the correct Kevin Smith. I do need to lose weight, but it's only to the tune of about 10 pounds. Okay, tell us some of the films or shows that you've worked on.
Well, like the other Mark Cowden, I am involved in the film industry, and I do have quite a few worldwide releases. I don't have quite the same titles as him, but I've worked with Rupert Grint from the Harry Potter films and Sean Ferris from the action films. And see, Northern Ireland is kind of tagged as the new place to make films. I don't know why that is. Maybe people are cheaper here, but the last 4 or 5 years I've been making films here, and I'm a cameraman and an audio technician, so I've been doing a bit of work on those films and doing some publicity for them. And I've always had an interest in the paranormal as well, as many people do. And, you know, I've been spiritually aware from quite a young age. I'm Cherokee Indian mixed with a bit of Scot-Irish, and one day I decided to take a vacation to Ireland and came over here and met some people that worked in the film industry and got offered a job, and I've been here ever since. And then I...
Okay, now how long have you been there?
Sorry?
How long have you been in Northern Ireland?
I've been here 12 years altogether.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so your move to the UK was all about your career.
Pretty much. I've always loved traveling around, and I'd seen most of the United States and Mexico, and decided to come back and trace the roots, as many Americans do, and ended up, I never really planned to stay here, but the circumstances worked out that way, and then I met a girl, and now I'm here for quite a long time, I suspect.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now, how did you get involved in paranormal investigation?
Well, this is where the story gets a bit over the top. The thing that you'll notice about Belfast, if you're ever here, is the role that it played in the Industrial Revolution. There are factories and linen mills scattered all over the city. Now, I went and to work in a post-production studio that was built in one of these old mills. And this mill was originally built in the early 1800s. So after being there about a month, I heard all the stories of the mill being haunted and this, that, and the other. And I come in one morning and noticed that my computer was doing strange things. And we have this process in post-production called ingesting or digitizing the footage. And what we would do is we would leave the computer overnight hooked to the camera, which would put the footage onto the computer. And when we'd come in the next morning, we would be there ready to work with. Mm-hmm. Well, I would come in the morning, and just strange things would happen. The footage would be slowed down to about a third of the speed that it should have been, and it would do things that it never would do during the day. So I would delete the footage and put it onto the computer again, and it worked fine during the day. Well, that night, put another tape in, did the same process, and I would come in the next morning, and it would be all mangled, and the same strange things would happen. But then the third morning that I came in, not only had the footage been tampered with, but the camera had been rewound, and the footage was completely recorded over, which meant that it wasn't as simple as me deleting the footage off of the computer and putting it on again. I had to work with the contaminated footage because that's all I had. And as soon as I listened to it, there were voices recorded onto this footage. And they were saying my name, Mark Hyde, Mark Hyde. And this freaked me out a little bit, but, you know, there's been a series of strange things like this throughout my life. But I had a friend.
Now, did you recognize the voices?
No, I didn't recognize the voices at all. It was, they were a bit electronic, but I could hear that one of them sounded like a young boy. And I had a friend who's a bit of a psychic, and I told her about it. And she had never been to where I worked and didn't know the layout of the place, but she was able to tell me over the phone the exact layout of the building. And she believed that there was a little boy in this mill. So I managed to trace back some of the history of the mill and found out that there had been a little 8-year-old boy killed in this mill by machine accident. And also that there had been an old man who was also killed in the mill. And just a strange series of events led to me just being infatuated with this and trying to get to the bottom of it. And was able to trace both of the people back, was able to trace both of them back to have been killed in this mill. And me and my friend, the psychic, we worked on this case for about 6 months and did what we could to alleviate the situation, and eventually everything seemed to go away. So I guess we did what we were supposed to do, but that got me interested in it.
Yeah.
And started making recordings, and some of these recordings caught the attention of Andy Matthews, who is a paranormal expert, and he had this television series coming up in Northern Ireland, and he asked me if I'd like to be involved with it, and I said, yeah, sure. And then that's how it all started.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't know if this will surprise you or not, but I have seen the show on a number of occasions.
Right.
And so, you know, I was quite familiar with what the show is all about.
Yeah.
Whenever you contacted me. But we have audience around the country, around the world, in over 140 countries. And they may not all be familiar with it. So tell us a little bit about this show, who's in it, and what do you do, and what is it that it's up to?
Well, basically, this show, it's a half-an-hour show, mm-hmm. and it's 50% history and 50% investigation. So what we do is we go into these historic places of interest that have the reputation of being haunted. And the first part of the show is we tell the history of the location. We interview people who frequent the location and get their views and talk about if they've seen things or heard things. And but the problem that you have is in Ireland, everything is a myth and a legend. So no matter where you are, there's going to be some sort of a legend attached to it. I mean, you can be having a drink in a bar, but it's not just going to be a normal bar. It's probably going to be the oldest bar in the world, you know, and it's going to have some sort of a ghost story attached to it. So the hardest part of what we did was the pre-production, because you would be handed a short list of locations, and you have to, we spent about a year working on 6 episodes before we even filmed them, just to try to figure out if we were going to get good locations, because that was the main thing. If you get a bad location, you're just going to be sitting there filming nothing. And when you've got PBC cameras rolling, you can't afford to take that risk. And so we've got a medium on the show. Her name is Marion Goodfellow. And she's, you know, there is a lot of corruption in the field that she does. And we were lucky enough to get one of the good guys. You know, she's completely legit. She's proven herself on many occasions with things that have to do with the show and things that have to do with me personally.
And let me throw my 2 cents in. I find her to be quite remarkable.
Yes, she's very good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's half the battle, is being able to trust who you're with and who's around you, that they're not just going to make stuff up for the cameras, and that they really are getting what they say that they're getting, because then that gives me faith to go and do what I do. But the whole show is, it's headed by a guy named Andy Matthews, who wrote the concept, and he's been on many television shows. You know, he's been on Haunted Homes and many of the leading television shows that were out years ago. And he's researched this stuff his whole life. And I think the bond that the three of us were able to get together on this has played a big role in the evidence that we've been able to achieve.
Okay, so you go out and you do a paranormal investigation of a site. What do you do on the show?
What I do is I'm 50% spiritual and 50% technology-minded. So, I mean, a lot of people don't think that the scientific and the spiritual side can really be as one, but I've always been of the other opinion. You know, I think everything like this can be together as one. I think everything's scientifically explainable all the way up to God. You know, we may not have figured it out yet, but that doesn't mean that it's not explainable. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I go in and I use my intuition, use the Cherokee side. I do a bit of dowsing and try to come up with my own opinion as to what I think might be going on and where the proper locations for setting up microphones and things like that is. And then that's what I would do. I would set up equipment, and I've devised a few different systems to help amplify things that could be there. And I've done a lot of work, and I figured out the best possible way to, you know, give us the best chance of actually recording something in the 3 days that we have in these locations.
All right, let me say for our listeners around the world who may not be familiar, when Mark says something about the Cherokee side, or he's part Cherokee, this is the name of a group of Native Americans, a nation of Native Americans that live in the United States of America. And by the way, I am part Cherokee as well.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice.
My great-great-grandmother was full-blood Cherokee. Now, how are these locations decided upon? I mean, you've got a list, and you have to decide. You have to sort of sift through this. How do you decide what locations you're going to investigate?
Well, it all starts off with a researcher who doesn't work with us. She's supplied by the network. And the researcher, she, you know, is not of a paranormal background or anything like that, and she first just starts out by finding places that have a good story attached to them. Now, that's where it gets tricky, because everywhere in Ireland has a good story attached to it. So what we have to do is we have to physically go and check each one of these places out. So it means spending about a year of middle-of-the-night ventures in every attic, castle, hotel, bar, and everything else that this woman comes up with. And mm-hmm. out of about 100 or 150, we usually manage to find 6 or 7 that we think are really active, and those are the ones that we go for.
So you sort of do, when you talked about pre-production, you sort of do a little miniature investigation of each site.
Yeah, our part do. myself and well, Marion doesn't, because Marion doesn't know where she's going ahead of time, and Andy lives in England, and he's, you know, he's in another country, so he doesn't really have time or to come over here and do this. But myself and a few of the local people here, we would go and physically check each one of these places out, and we would sit there, and you know, if we're there for 3 or 4 days and absolutely nothing happens, then we can pretty much guarantee that when the cameras are rolling that nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we would pick the absolute most active places that we can, and if they correspond with a good story for the final output, then those are the locations that we use.
Well, let me say, for those who are watching on our private channel, the film clips that you're seeing during some of the breaks are provided by Mark, and these were used, this is from the show, and I assume this is from the show Tuesday night, right?
There's two halves to this video. The first half of the video is from episode one of this current second series that aired about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And it basically shows a system that I've devised, and I call it the ITC Orchestra, where I use a cello and a violin to dip into infrasound and ultrasound, which is frequencies just beyond and below our hearing range. And I've used these musical instruments attached to certain types of microphones with certain frequency tones, and they basically enable me to hear and record frequencies that would normally be just outside of our hearing range. So anything that could be said or could be floating around in the atmosphere that we normally wouldn't hear, this helps amplify those a little bit and record those. So the first half of the video is an example of that, and the second half of the video is the conversation that aired last week.
Mm-hmm. You know, electronic voice phenomena, as to the best of my knowledge, was pioneered by a lady originally in the United States, but it was picked up and really pioneered by Tina Laurent, who is in the UK, and she's been on this show.
Yeah.
Now, what you're talking about, we've got a break coming up, so we'll have to get into this on the other side, but what you're talking about seems to me to be something a little bit different from just electronic voice phenomena, because we're using a violin and a cello, and I want to get into that. Why a violin? Why a cello? And, you know, if this is electronic voice phenomena, how would a violin and a cello help? And if it's not electronic voice phenomena, then what kind of phenomena is it? We'll get into all of that on the other side of this break. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Mark Cowden, and he is a cast member in the BBC show Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts. And, you know, when we went away for break, I had brought up the subject of the violin and the cello. Now, my question, and I want to make sure you understand where I'm coming from with this. If EVPs are what you're picking up, then how and why would a violin and cello be of any help, because they're not electronic? If what you're picking up using the violin and cello, if they need the violin and cello, then are they truly EVPs, electronic voice phenomena?
Yeah, see, the thing is we use the violin, or use the violin and the cello, but we put that in the link. The end result is still the voice being recorded onto electronic equipment. But what I was trying to achieve in the theory that I had is that a lot of EVP could possibly be just outside of our hearing range, and we don't pick that up, or if we do pick it up, we can't hear it when we play it back. So the dilemma I had was trying to figure out a way to amplify the room atmosphere. But a conventional electronic amplifier wouldn't work because it's on the other side of the recording device. So I needed an amplifier that was before the recording device. So I started looking at frequencies, and I saw that the violin could go up into the ultrasound range quite a bit, and I saw that the cello could go down into the infrasound range quite a bit. So what I decided to do was develop a system where the person conducting the EVP experiment is standing in the room. On one side, we have a violin, and we blast a little bit of white noise through one of the acoustic holes. And on the other side, we have a microphone, and we do the same with the cello. And the goal in this is to dip in to a little bit of infrasound and a little bit of ultrasound. So you're still recording the EVPs. You're just able to record a little bit outside of our hearing range. Now, you can't hear infrasound, you can't hear ultrasound, but the borderlines of these frequencies can sometimes be amplified just a little bit, and it allows you to pick up any EVPs that could possibly be just outside of our hearing range.
I see. So it's really sort of a preamp for an EVP, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. I understand. I thought the results were quite amazing, by the way. I just didn't understand really how they function. Okay, now, before you started working with paranormal investigation, I mean, before you, let's just say before you started working with this show, what was your attitude about paranormal investigation, and what is your attitude about it now?
Well, my attitude in regards to the paranormal and my attitude in regards to paranormal investigation are two different things. I've always been interested in paranormal because I've always had a bit of a psychic side to me. I wouldn't be a full-blown medium, but like I said earlier, I think the indigenous blood in me has helped preserve something that society has bled out of a lot of people. So when you're growing up as a kid, you think everybody's the same, and everybody feels this way and thinks this way. But as you begin to get older, you realize that no, everybody's not the same, and that certain people are quite unique in the way that they feel and the things that they perceive. So I've always had a strong interest in the paranormal. There's been occasions that I've seen things and heard things in the past, and I mean, I've been recording EVP and paranormal activity long, long before I even started with this show. But as far as paranormal investigation goes, I'm not a huge fan of the television shows that are out. And, I mean, I think sometimes it's almost like they're chasing a wild animal or something, or a different species. And I think that there needs to be a lot more compassion put into what they're dealing with here because, you know, it's not a circus act. And it's you know, I think it needs to be looked at a little bit more seriously than it is looked at. And having said that, that's what we're trying to do now is with this project and some of the other projects that I've got coming out in the future is we're trying to bring back a little bit of the spiritual side and mold that in with the technology side and give people a little bit of a more truthful outlook on what we're doing and what's possible with this.
Do you think being part Cherokee is in any way helpful? Does it add to or contribute to what you're doing with paranormal investigations? If so, how?
I think that it does because, you know, I think that it keeps me grounded. It makes the subject not quite as taboo as it would be to other people. And pretty much no matter what happens, it doesn't really surprise me that much. And, you know, I'm not going to go running out of a room. I think there must be a purpose to it. And the Cherokee side keeps the fear out as well. Because a lot of these paranormal investigators, they spend their whole life begging for something to happen. Knock three times, throw something across the room, touch one of us, push one of us. And then as soon as it happens, they go screaming out of the room thinking, oh, this is evil. It's evil. It's out to kill us. And, you know, that's, we don't know what effort it takes for somebody who has passed over to make that kind of contact, and to ask for it to happen and then run from it just doesn't make any sense to me. So I think the native side of me has kept a part of me alive and a part of me grounded to be able to accept the things that happen that I go out and ask for.
Well, as you and I suppose everyone else who's part Native American, who's at least studied anything about their heritage, as we know, among the Cherokee people and among most of the Native American people, the view of the spirit world is really not a view of the spirit world.
Yes.
Because and I don't want to confuse the listeners, but there's no hard dividing line between my world, your world, where we're living right now, and the spirit world. You live in a house or you live in a flat. A dog lives out in the yard. A monkey lives up in a tree. But when we see a dog, we're not amazed by it. It's just another creature that lives on this planet. We see a monkey, we're not amazed by it. It's just another creature that lives on this planet. And for the native peoples here in America, a spirit is just another person, another thing that lives here on this planet. And it's just as real as the dog, the monkey, or me.
That's absolutely right. I mean, whenever, say you're driving down the road and you pass a playground, you'll see 10 or 11 kids in that playground, and they're in their own little worlds. The only thing that they see is the little world that they're all in playing together. There could be people passing outside. There could be cars going down the streets, airplanes flying over, and those things are there, but those kids don't even notice it. But that doesn't mean that they're not there.
Well, that's true. Also, among Native peoples, dreams are, for instance, in your dream, if you travel somewhere in your dream, you may recognize that it is a dream when you wake up, but the dream is as real as if you had actually physically gone there.
Yes, that's true. I would have a lot of dreams that are very similar to that. And in the dreams that I have, I would always travel somewhere. And, you know, you're actually there. Whenever you're in that dream state, you're at that place.
Yeah, and let me say this, and we'll get back to the show in a moment. We're just kind of talking Cherokee right now. But look, the way this works, folks, is like this. I know what it feels like to be a bird and to fly because in my dreams, I have flown. And it's as real in the minds of Native peoples, that's as real as if I had become a bird and flown.
Yes, and you know, this is one of the big reasons why we contacted you. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be one of the few people in the paranormal and the television world that actually have an agent. And we sat down and we thought about it, and we thought, you know, we can contact all the conventional media, but one, they're not going to get it. Two, it's just going to be, you know, the very end joke of the news segment. And three, it's just going to be a circus act. Or we could target people like the Kevin Smith Show and various others who we know every person that's watching or listening is going to be giving us their undivided attention and taking seriously what we have to say.
Well, you're right. And, of course, you know, I guess there's a percentage in any audience that won't take it seriously. But I have to say, this audience is pretty massive. It's around the world. And I have to say that I don't run into that very much. I do run into it once in a while, but I don't run into it very much. Folks really take seriously the information that they're hearing on the show. Now, let's dive into that information a little bit. This experiment that you ran and that you filmed, and I assume it is kind of an experiment because you're using the violin and the cello, and you're trying to see, is it possible to carry on a real-time conversation with a spirit and to hear this spirit answer and converse in real time? And you've got this on video. And this was on your show. But let's go into this. Where were you, and what was it you were trying to accomplish in this investigation?
Well, in this particular investigation, we were in an old hotel in a town called Carrickfergus, Northern Ireland. And this hotel is about 600 years old. So even, you know, starting off, we've got 600 years of emotion trapped inside these walls. And there have been various reports over the years of people who've seen this and people who've seen that. And the thing about it is I don't even like to know the history of the place before I go in, because I don't want any preconceived notions as to what I might get. But this was our very last episode of 2 years of filming. It was our 10th episode. And I've been recording these voices and these replies for 2 years. And one of the guys suggested, wouldn't it be great if we could actually hear it as it happened for once? And then that got the little gerbils in my brain running on the wheel. So I thought, what could we do to make this possible? So in this occasion, I didn't even use the violin or the cello. We had one microphone. There was a room 21 and a room 22. They put me in room 22, and they put Marion and Andy in room 21.
Okay, let me break in for just a second and clarify something. For this particular experiment, you were not using the violin and cello?
No, that's right. I mean, the violin and the cello was another experiment altogether.
I see.
And I'll get into this a little bit later, but there doesn't seem to be any certain requirements as to, you know, what equipment you use or how much you paid for that equipment. I mean, some of the best examples were done on some of the most primitive devices, and then some of the worst examples were done on some of the most expensive equipment. It seems to depend more about the people present, your motives, and how you really feel about what you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have two rooms, 21 and 22, in this old hotel.
Yes, 21 is the room that was apparently haunted, and 22 was the room that I had set up the control center in. And all I used, one single microphone that we placed in the bathroom of the room 21, and Marion and Andy were studying on the bed, Andy with his dowsing rods and Marion doing her spiritual thing, and I used two laptops in the next room. The audio was coming into the first laptop, and then out through a cable and onto the second laptop, with the theory being, you know, EVP, a lot of times you have to play it back to hear it. So basically I was going to be listening in on the second laptop, so it was pretty much going to replicate the playback. And
all right, we have to step away for a break, and I've got a couple of questions, and then we'll move forward with this experiment. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Mark Cowden of the BBC show Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts. And Mark, I got a question before we go any further, but I want you to continue telling us about this investigation. But you said that you put one microphone in the bathroom. And in the room where the psychic is working, what is her name?
Marion Goodfellow.
Marion. Okay.
Yes.
So she and Andy are in room, 21?
Yes, they're in room 21.
And you put one microphone in the bathroom. Why? Why wouldn't you put the microphone where they are?
Well, the rooms are really small anyway, so the bathroom is pretty much where they are. It's just off to the side. But what I was trying to do is, because they have a film crew in the room with them, and I have a film crew in the room with me, is when these people are moving around, I don't want to pick up their jackets rustling or anything else like that. I want to what I'm getting, I want to be the best possible chance of something genuine. And if you're doing this live, you don't want to have to try to weed out a lot of contamination while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And also, I did a bit of dowsing in that room and found out that there was something about that area where the bathroom was located, which was probably the best place to put a microphone. So, I mean, I know when I'm describing it, it might sound like it's far away or in the next room, but it really was quite close to them, and I could hear their voices, anything possibly paranormal, but I was weeding out the contamination at the same time.
Okay. Well, go ahead with what you were telling us about this experiment, and I'll have another question or two here in a moment, but go ahead with what you were telling us.
Yeah, so we've got one single microphone just off the side of the room, Andy and Marion sitting on the bed, and myself in the next room with two laptops, and I was actually listening to the second laptop, which is replicating the playback for the EVP session. And I also could use the first laptop to go back and analyze anything that I may have not understood or picked up correctly. So Andy and Marion, they're sitting there, and they start getting into their session. And it always takes a few minutes while Marion's warming up, and she's tuning into the location and that. And she begins, and she says she's feeling the presence there, and starts communicating, and about 2 minutes into it, I start getting responses to her questions. And the thing about it is I was wired with an intercom system where I could speak to a guy in the next room and tell him the responses I was getting, and he would wire that back to her. And this ended up going on for about 45 minutes, and I think she spoke to maybe two or three different people in this room who were in spirit.
Okay, and that's one of the questions I have. We can see in the video a couple of things happening, and I'll come back to you speaking through the intercom in just a moment, but I want to go back to headphones. I can see you switching headphones back and forth. What's that about?
No, I was switching headphones back and forth because there was so much coming in. I mean, we were bombarded with voices and replies that I didn't actually catch everything on the first time that I heard it, so I had to use the second laptop, or the first laptop in the loop, to go back and replay the voice that I just heard. And if I could understand it on the second go, then I would relay into the next room what was being said. But if I couldn't make it out, then I just went back to the other laptop and continued on with the conversation. So even though we have 45 minutes and we've got a number of replies, there ended up being probably at least twice that much I didn't actually catch.
Okay. So you're relaying it via the intercom to someone in the other room. Who were you giving that information to in the other room, and why? What was the purpose of telling that person in the other room?
Well, the person in the other room was one of the local guys that was on the show, one of the Irish guys. And basically, there was a skeptic in the room with him, and also for the viewing people, you know, we wanted some audio and some video for the people who were watching the show, just because basically, if we kept everything quiet, it would have been pretty dry viewing for the people.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, it was so that the audience could hear what you were getting to hear.
Yeah, so the audience could hear, and so Marion would know that I was actually getting these replies as well, and she would continue on with what she was doing instead of, you know, maybe stopping at one point and wondering if we should carry on or not.
Now, EVPs very often, and you've mentioned it, you can tell it's a voice, but it's very, very difficult to tell what they've said. It's unintelligible to us what they've said. And you said you got a number of those. What do you think the reason is for that?
That's the million-dollar question, really. I mean, we don't really know what's happening in scientific terms, and we don't, you know, the thing is, where do these voices come from? They're not coming from a physical body, so therefore we can't dissect them and figure out why some are better quality than others, or why we can understand some and we can't understand others, and even we can't even explain why some of the best examples of EVP were recorded on, you know, little cheap voice recorders and vice versa. And that's what we're trying to figure out. And that because that's the first time that's ever happened, there's a lot of questions that we have, and we've replicated a couple of more times since then, and we're figuring out a little bit more about it each time. But you know, we're working on trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
Well, in terms of what's going on, you know, one of the questions whenever we do a show where we talk about EVPs, if we open the telephones to callers, we get calls where people ask this question. We get flash messages where people ask this question. And then for days later, we get it in email. And that is, do you think these are spirits of people who have died, or could these possibly be people in another dimension who are trying to communicate with us at the same time we're trying to communicate with them? What do you think?
I think all of the above. You know, I don't think we're limited to just one possibility. The same thing with paranormal and with ghosts. I don't think there's only one definition for ghost. I think there's a lot of definitions for ghost. You know, some seem to be replays of things that happened in the past, and some seem to have intelligence and directly communicate with you. In the same way that we have residual visual hauntings, I've recorded residual EVPs, which were conversations that were had hundreds of years ago and just still, you know, floating about in the atmosphere. And to be honest, I've even heard of occasions where people have recorded EVPs that were spoken by somebody that is in a dream state that's still alive.
Ooh, now see, that's not one that I've heard.
There you
that's
go.
That's a new one for me. Okay, well, let's talk about direct communication. During this investigation, you have captured on video actually carrying on a conversation with, we'll say, a spirit, and they're making intelligible and intelligent comments and answers. Does that indicate to you that this is a ghost? Is this the spirit of someone who has died, or is this some kind of ethereal spirit out there that has never been in a physical body? What do you think this is?
I think this case in particular, I think, is of somebody that died, because the location in question, some of the history could be traced back to some of the former residents, and there was a traumatic incident that happened there. There was a woman who was having an affair with her current partner, and the man found out, and he ended up killing both of them. And back in those days, religion was a lot more strict than it is now. I mean, something that wouldn't really even be considered a sin at all today was looked at as hellfire and brimstone in those days. I mean, and adultery is certainly something that could make somebody not want to move forward to where they're supposed to go. And I believe that's what happened in this case. I believe all of the participants in this situation found themselves dead and confused and afraid of what lay next, and they just sat there for all that time and needed counsel, and it looks like Marianne was able to provide some of that counsel for them and explain to them, you know, the world's evolved and the things that you've done aren't really that bad in the modern world today. So I think she convinced at least two of them that it was okay to go wherever it was they're supposed to go.
All right, we have a break coming up here in just about 20 seconds. And when we come back from this break, let's talk about impact that the current world has on the spirit world, if any. And what impact does the spirit world have on the current world? We'll be back right after this. Thank you. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I am delighted you're here. I am truly sympathetic for whatever it is that has caused you to miss the first hour if you're just now joining us. We're talking with Mark Cowden. He is a cast member on the BBC show Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts. And something truly amazing was achieved on this show, and that is he was able to capture on video and audio a real-time conversation, okay? A real-time conversation between a psychic who is a living person and a spirit. When we watch paranormal shows, Mark, what we see is the EVP session. Then they go back and they listen to what they got. And then, you know, they sort of put it together in the reveal section.
Yeah.
What you got was real time.
That's correct.
And I'm not aware of that happening before. Something close to this happened with Robbie Thomas and his movie Dead Whisper, but not exactly this. And this is truly real time, and people watching our TV channel have seen the clips that you've sent me. And by the way, folks, those are used by permission. We got permission from Mark, and he got permission from whomever for you to see those tonight. Okay, now, when we're talking about EVPs and we're talking about conversing with these EVPs, obviously, we're talking about the EVP being made by a spirit that is actually still living, but not physical.
Yes. That's the thing is, with EVP, there could be a number of reasons why and a number of circumstances as to what we're getting here, and we don't really know the answer to that, but the majority of the ones that we get seem to be a result of some sort of confusion with a death experience. And instead of going into the unknown, these people decide that it's a safer bet to stay close to their physical existence. So you seem to be getting a consciousness and a living person that's still in our physical realm, just without the physical body.
Okay, so that brings up the concept of our current world having an impact on their existence, whatever realm we would call their existence, and their existence having an impact on us. Now, here's why I say it brings that up. If they can communicate with us and carry on a conversation, as you've demonstrated with your video, if they can do that, it means then they are aware of what's going on in our world.
Well, yes and no. We've got some occasions where, you know, if you're doing an EVP session and you ask the date, and, you know, you'll get the date from when they were alive. Some circumstances, they don't seem to know that time has even passed. And there's been other occasions where they know fine rightly what's going on around them, what's happening around them, and, you know, what's being done. And the thing is what we can't figure out is the difference between the two. How come in some circumstances they still think it is the date and the time that they lived in, and how come in other circumstances they know exactly what's going on?
So when you're able to get an EVP, based on what you just described, it would seem that there are times when the medium or the psychic is sort of invading their space and they're living, say, in 1929.
Yeah.
And there are other times when they are sort of invading our space in that they're totally aware of what's going on right now.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, the one thing I'll say is on the occasions where they seem to think it's the same time as when they lived, they seem to need the medium to actually hear us. And on the occasions where they know exactly what's happening right now, they seem to be able to directly communicate with us. So it seems to work both ways, whereas a lot of times we would need a medium to know where and when they are. A lot of times they need a medium to know where we are.
You know, that sort of sounds like it's indicative of maybe sort of different levels of existence on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's exactly right. There seems to be everybody, you know, people think our world and the spirit world. But in my experience and from what I've seen, the spirit world seems to have a lot of different levels and a lot of different hiding places.
You know, the reason I bring that up about levels of existence, it would be curious, and maybe you've done this, but curious to note if there are similarities. For instance, when you're getting EVPs where they're totally aware of what's going on right now, here and now, what characteristics of these people, what would they have in common? Because whatever they have in common would seem, I think, to indicate, or would indicate to us, why they are grouped together in a level of existence that is different from these others that don't know what's going on now.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to think of similarities. Now, one thing that comes into my mind is the ones that seem to know what's happening at the minute with us seems to have been just maybe a personal choice of theirs to stick around. And the ones that seem to be back in the time when they were alive seem to be the result of some sort of a traumatic incident, where a lot of examples we got of that, where we investigate prisons, and prisons are riddled with paranormal activity. And a lot of the EVPs and the entities that we've come across in prisons, they seem to think it's the same time as whenever they were alive. And I'm not completely sure why that is, but yeah, that's a good question.
Well, do you think the people in prisons are stuck in time, are they in their mind still serving time?
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. I think they're still, you know, a death sentence doesn't end with the physical death of the person's body. It seems to carry on until, you know, these people can be convinced that it's okay for them to move forward.
I'm hearing a little beeping. Is that your phone just about to die?
I think it might be, actually, yes.
I hope not. Okay, just in case, can you share with us, out of all the investigations that you've done, what's the most amazing one that you've been involved in?
The most amazing investigation that I've been involved with would probably be the pre-Hen and Londonderry episode, where I used the cello and the violin to get the voices, because what you actually saw on the air was a small fragment of what we recorded, and it pretty much covers all the topics that we've talked about tonight. We seem to have recorded quite a few different entities from quite a few different times and quite a few different realms, and even got a few occasions of what seemed to be looped voices that were just weren't communicating with us at all. They were just kind of floating about there in the atmosphere. And it was a case of, I got the idea to use the musical instruments as amplifiers and went in, and it worked perfectly. And that was probably the most amazing one that I've been on.
Have you been on any that, I know you're pretty stoic about all of these things that happen in these investigations, but have you been on any that sort of freaked you out a little bit?
Yeah, we were in one called Armagh Prison, and it's an old abandoned prison. And the thing that freaked me out is the resident skeptic, the guy who's fearless and thinks paranormal doesn't exist. He decided to go and stay in one of the cells down on his own for a couple of hours, and he ended up getting grabbed around the neck and shaken about a little bit right on CCTV camera. And regular viewers of the show will remember that episode from last year. And that was a pretty freaky experience, because even though nothing's really ever happened to me and I've never been slapped around or attacked, whenever you see it happening to somebody else, it kind of gets you a little bit on edge, like, well, you know, I don't want to make any of these guys mad, because if they're capable of doing that, then they're capable of coming after me as well.
Yeah. Well, I would think that would be a little bit freaky, but most especially since it happened to a complete non-believer.
Absolutely, and that's kind of, you know, that's, it couldn't happen to a better person as far as we're concerned, because, you know, this guy had absolutely no explanation for what happened. All he could say was, yeah, something grabbed me around the neck.
I'm sure he's very glad to hear you say it couldn't happen to a better person.
Exactly. Even whenever we're out on location and we say, you know, if you feel the need to touch somebody, well, please make it this guy.
Yeah. After that experience, I think we probably lost you. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, but yeah. I don't know for how long.
Okay. After that experience, did his opinion about paranormal things change?
You know, the funny thing about these skeptics is for when something like that happens to them for 5 minutes, they're just completely in awe, thinking, oh, my views have changed in regards to the paranormal. But then you go away, and the next time you talk to them, they've always come up with some over-the-top explanation as to what could have happened. And this explanation is always farther out there than the possibility of a ghost coming up and touching them.
Yeah, it was probably a Chinese wedding candle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Okay, let me say this. If we do lose you, will your phone operate if it's plugged into the charger?
I don't think it will. It's a wireless handset. But
yeah.
I can try to call you back on my cell phone, but I don't know how well it'll work.
Okay, well, if we lose you, we'll work at reconnection, and you can try to call us back. You have my telephone number here, I guess.
Yes, if it's the same one off the website, I've got it.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
All right, now, you are, I said, kind of stoic about this, and you know that's truly part of the Native American sort of makeup, in that, you know, Native Americans sort of tend to take the attitude of whatever is just is.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the thing about being a Native person is acceptance of the world around you and on all levels. And that's the way with me. You know, people have the outlook of big, scary, spooky ghost, and people basically get what they ask for. And I just go into a location with compassion, and I have compassion for this person's circumstances and the problems that they may have carried over with them, and we try to work with that. And so far, that's worked for me. I've never had any bad experiences, and I've never been attacked or anything like that, and I've seen all the people around me being pushed and scratched and everything else, so mm-hmm. I'm pretty grateful for the things that I've carried over from my native side.
Well, the reason I bring this up, statistically, people who are Native American, if they are either full-blood Native American, but particularly if they are Native American and part Celtic, tend to have a very, very high percentage of them who either have contact with extraterrestrials or with ghosts, etc. Why do you think that is? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we lost him. All right, not a problem. We'll just hang up and see if he calls us back, and using his other phone. But, you know, that is one of the things, folks, that studies have been done, and it's been a pretty remarkable thing that people who are part Native American, part Irish, or other types of Celtic peoples, for some reason seem to have a very high incidence of paranormal activity and a very high incidence of contact with extraterrestrials. Some people would say abduction experiences. However, some of those are, you talk to the people that it happens to, and they'll tell you it was certainly not an abduction because they were willing. So that's why I say encounters with extraterrestrials. Now, I'm part Native American. I'm part Cherokee. And sometime, I'll tell you, sometime, I'm going to show on our TV channel a picture of my great-great-grandmother. Of course, it's a very, very old picture, but she's quite a striking beauty, I would have to say. And then one must wonder what happened to me. But she was full-blood Cherokee. I am part Cherokee, and then the rest is Celtic. As far as I know, I have not talked to any spirits or heard any spirits talk to me. I will say that I've been sort of blessed, I guess you could say, with sort of sensitive intuition. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. And yet I pick up on things very, very quickly. When I talk with someone, I can talk to you for about 5 seconds and go write a 3 or 4 page description of your personality and character and be right on target. And I only need to talk with you for a few seconds. Now, where does that come from? What's the deal with this mixture of Cherokee or Native American and Celtic? There seems to be something there. I don't know what it is. Well, this is a pretty amazing, amazing video that Mark Cowden has shared with us. I apologize that we, at least for the moment, have lost contact with him. His telephone is dead. So if he's able to contact us on the on his other telephone, that'll be fine. I don't have that number. This is the only number I have. So we'd certainly love for him to do that, and we'll see if he's able to do that. Now, this is an amazing video that he shared with you tonight. Those of you who have been watching our TV channel, quite an amazing video. Because even, I mean, there were parts of it where I cannot understand the EVP until they say, well, he's saying this. And then I listen very closely, and yeah, I can make that out. Of course, they work with this all the time, so they perhaps recognize it quicker than I would. But what's amazing about this, even the parts where I have a little difficulty understanding what the EVP is saying, the spirit, it's quite obvious that this spirit, or whatever it is that's causing this EVP to happen, is actually carrying on a conversation with the psychic, answering questions, making comments, and it's intelligent conversation, like you and I would have. All right. So as far as I know, I know for sure I haven't seen that happen before. And as far as I know, it has not happened before on television. Well, you got to see it. So I'm assuming that Mark is not going to be able to get back in touch with us. So what I'm going to do is open up the telephone line for you. Now, if he does get back in touch with us, we're going to resume our conversation with Mark Cowden. But the telephone line is open now at 623-444-5889. Toll free in the United States and Canada, the number is 888-223-4599. And if you happen to be outside of the USA and outside of Canada, but you want to participate in the show, you can either call our main number, 623-444-5889, or you can use, because I don't have a toll-free number for outside the USA and Canada, you can use our flash message option by going to my website. You get over to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. And on the right side of that picture is a link that says flash message. In this audience, we have a number of people who do converse with people on the other side. We also have in this audience quite a number of people who are either Native American or part Native American. And I invite all of you to call and shed some light on what we have seen and heard here tonight. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Francois from Montreal.
Hello, Francois.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Mr. Colwin, if he's not there. But I had a comment.
Okay.
I know by experience that the voice we heard on the tape of Mr. Colwin is the voice of an insectoid demon.
Now, how do you know that's the voice of an insectoid demon?
A few years ago, like 3-4 years ago, I was at the county jail in Montreal, and a guy came in, and at night, he was like a guy like 5'4", like shorter than me, and he was real nice, like a model, you know, and at night, I had like I was wake up by a greenish glow, you know, like a cloud, you know, like a emerald in color, and it was trying to get in my skull by the place I have a plastic patch because I had an accident. They didn't found all of my skull, so they have to put a plastic patch, and you know, like I pray to my goddess, my Hindu goddess, and the thing goes away, and then it comes back under the form of a 2 feet insectoid, you know, like with insect face and like humanoid body.
And when it, I assume it spoke to you, and you heard its voice.
Yeah, but it didn't spoke to me, you know, but I'm going to finish the story quickly. And, you know, like, and then I warned the thing that I have like a psychic body too, you know, like, I fight him a little bit, and then it came back through like a green tunnel, you know, like where the cell door was. And it was carrying a flashlight, some kind of a weapon, like to kill me.
Okay, Francois, we have to step away for break. You just hang on. I want to hear the rest of this. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Mark Cowden, and Mark suffered his phone suffered a catastrophic death. So he's not with us. We've got Francois from Montreal on the line with us. Francois, I want you to have the opportunity to wrap up your story. You're going to have to make it pretty quick because I need to move on to the next call, but go ahead.
No problem. I'm quite finished. Then this game came back with some kind of a flashlight, and everything was always like ghostly green. You know, it wasn't like so real. And I kicked it in the face, And then the thing disappeared, and it was overshadowing the, this guy named Max. He was sleeping on the floor because we were three in the cell, and he was close to the window. And he was like, you know, like shaking his jaw, you know, and trying to put it back in place. I don't know what. And at the same time, I saw the thing, like the face of the thing overshadowing his own face, and it was like looking through the window to the sky and making like those strange metallic noise, like a little bit like a pig going to the slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And, you know, like I didn't understand whatever the thing said. You know, it sounds like another language. And I keep all night praying to my goddess and
saying, but it sounded to you the same as what you heard in the video that Mark shared with us. The sound was the same, right?
Yep, same mm-hmm. sound.
All right, Francois, thank you for the call. Interesting. That sounded like a frightening night. 623-444-5889. What do you think, folks, about this conversation business? Do you think that this is the proof that it's the spirit world is real? What do you think about it? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Jeff from Philadelphia.
I'm sorry, your first name?
Hi, it's Jeff from Philadelphia.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Are you a first-time caller?
I'm sorry?
Are you a first-time?
Yeah, I am a first-time caller. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, we got to give you some applause for that, you know. Well, that's not it. Hang on. There we go. Some applause. Jeff in Philadelphia, what's on your mind?
Well, actually, something I wanted to comment on something that you had said earlier. You had mentioned this before on some previous shows, and when you mentioned it again tonight, I knew I had to call because this seems like more than a coincidence. I don't really believe in coincidences, but let me just give you a quick synopsis of my background, and maybe at any time you can stop me and tell me if this sounds familiar. I'm Irish. I'm German. I'm Native American, although in this case I'm Blackfoot Indian.
Uh-huh.
And I've also, most of my life I've also been, I guess, I've never really had paranormal experiences like you've mentioned on the show earlier, or, you know, I haven't really seen a ghost or been abducted by aliens, but I've been interested in these topics for a very, very long time. And one of the things that I would always say to, like, people who don't know me is that I'm always been a really good judge of character. I can usually talk to somebody or, you know, watch their body language and tell you all different aspects of their personality, their likes and dislikes and things of that nature. So I just, and the thing also I wanted to mention was that my great-great-grandmother as well was full-blooded Blackfoot Indian. So some of these things that you said are just really, it just kind of weirded me out because our background is so similar in terms mm-hmm. of some of these topics. And I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that that seemed like a really odd coincidence to me.
Well, I'll tell you, that's interesting. And I think the reason why the mixture of Native American with Celtic seems to be kind of a powerful combination for the kinds of things you're talking about. The reason, I think, is this. When you look at Native American cultures and beliefs, they are different from tribe to tribe, from nation to nation, but there's some commonalities about them. And you look at the Celtic beliefs, on the surface, they don't appear to be similar. But the fact is, at their core, they really are similar, almost identical, because the Celtic beliefs, they believed in a pervasive spirit existence right along with us. We would today say consciousness everywhere, so that everything you see is a manifestation of consciousness.
Right.
They would say everything is spirit. So they the Celts dealt with the spirits of the woods, the spirits of the water, the spirits of the rocks, and so forth. Different terminology among Native Americans, but the concept was the same, in that spirit is everywhere and is not separate from us. And so at the core, they're very similar. And I'm just speculating, but my speculation is it's that combination that provides sort of a powerful formula for the high instance of paranormal, psychic, and extraterrestrial activity among people with that sort of heritage. I'm just speculating. I don't know that that's the case.
Right, but I think it's an interesting speculation on your part, and I've always thought that to be somewhat of an amazing coincidence that our background is almost, well, it's not identical, but it's very, very similar in that respect.
Did your great-grandmother murder her husband?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Mine did, so it's not similar anymore. My great-grandmother murdered her first husband, and the reason was he owned a store and was quite successful, and she and the bookkeeper for the store, the accountant, murdered her husband so they could take over the store, and they did. So I'm from the lineage of the first marriage.
Gotcha. But, I'll have to check with my grandmother, but if I'm not mistaken, I think I, too, also have a picture of my great-great-grandmother, a really old picture.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's cool. The picture I have of my great-great-grandmother is when she was probably in her mid-20s. And she's actually very beautiful. And if you were to take her out of that photograph and put her in today's clothing, scale of 1 to 10, I'd put her at about a 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but deadly. She was deadly.
Yeah.
Okay, Jeff, thanks for the call. Very interesting. All righty, folks. And by the way, let me say, there is a possibility that we will be going on the air with a radio station that does cover Philadelphia. They've contacted me, and we're going to be discussing that in the next few days, and we'll see. All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mark Cowden again, Mr. Smith.
All righty, Mark. Well, you got back with us.
Yeah, we'll give it another try. I don't know how long it'll last. The guy can talk to the dead, but he can't keep a phone line going to Arizona.
Mark, that brings up something. Very often we have seen on the various TV shows about paranormal activity that equipment is functioning perfectly, and then suddenly it seems to just malfunction when the spirits show up. Have you had that happen before?
Yeah, we have actually had that happen. We were investigating a famous poltergeist case here in Ireland. We were up in the mountains in an old abandoned cottage. And we tried for the life of us to get an EVP or to get a voice or to get something coming through, and nothing would come through whatsoever. But then at the same time, everybody's flashlights, everybody's cameras, everybody's anything that was electronic just started malfunctioning and going haywire. And it kind of brought the question in my mind was, is this their way of trying to make contact? Are they incapable of leaving us a message or making communication with us in the electronic form? So is this kind of their way of letting us know that they're here?
Well, you know, we were talking about the possibility of there being various levels of existence in the spirit world. And that would sort of indicate to me, and my interpretation of it would be, if there are those levels, and the only way they can, these particular spirits can make some kind of contact is to disrupt your equipment. They can't speak to you and do an EVP with you. This must be a very primitive spirit.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we're not sure. You know, you could come up with all the possibilities in the world, and still we have no way of verifying any of the information or the theories that we have at the minute. So we're kind of just taking it one step at a time, and until we figure it out. And maybe, you know, we might not get the answers at all until we pass over ourselves and see for ourselves what's happening there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to get back with us, and most especially because I have a flash message from Ireland. Okay, so, and this is Kerry in Ireland. I'm not in Ireland. I haven't been to Ireland, so maybe you can tell me. I can't tell from the spelling if this is a guy or a girl. Kerrye.
Well, the thing about the names here is it's hard to tell, but I would think that's probably a girl.
Okay. Well, Kerry,
forgive me.
Okay, yeah, and, you know, if we're wrong about that, Kerry, we apologize. But hey, I'm an ignorant American. What would you expect? All right. Could EVPs sometimes be the little people because they seem to be able to slip between material and spirit worlds?
Well, I suppose anything is possible. I mean, I wouldn't be an expert on Irish folklore, but I do know and work with people who swear that this, you know, this stuff is real, and the little people and the fairies and everything else, you know, these things that we've put down as tall tales or Irish folklore, they seem to have a lot of truth to them. But yeah, that's a good question.
Have you done any investigation of that side of the paranormal?
Not as of yet. We haven't done any investigation, and a big reason why we haven't is because we depend a lot on local people to do this kind of stuff, and local people, they'll dabble into the paranormal, but they won't dabble into little people or things like that. You know, that's something that they're very superstitious, and they tread very cautiously when dealing with that subject. What I will say is that I'm working on a format at the minute with a production company where we are going to travel to ancient sites, ancient monuments such as Newgrange and Stonehenge and things like that, and we're going to conduct our paranormal investigation inside these places and see how the evidence differs than to the locations that we're currently investigating. And in doing this, we'll be taking a lot of people that kind of understand the Celtic world and understand the terminology.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. We're talking with Mark Cowden. He is a cast member of the BBC television show Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts. It is a show that I have seen. I'm not really sure if I saw it on BBC or if I saw it on one of the satellite channels or cable channels here, but I have seen it on several occasions. And he presented to us tonight, those of you who have been watching on our television channel have seen some amazing video footage of a conversation, real time, between a human and someone, a living human, and someone who is on, as they say, the other side. Mark, do you think that paranormal investigation is important?
Do I think that paranormal investigation is important?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I do think it's important, but I think that it's important if it's done in its true light. You know, I don't think that making a mockery of the subject or running around in the dark, attempting to scare yourself on some sort of a, you know, and some sort of a high is the right way to go about it. I think it is important to bring awareness to people. Now, the thing about me is I've never been out to prove anything to the scientific community, and I really don't care whether they buy this or not. What I'm trying to do is I know that there is a lot of people out there in the world like me who are spiritually aware, who may be at a crossroads, and who may be wondering what it's all about. And what I'm attempting to do is I'm attempting to show these people that there is something more to life and death than just evolving from fish and ended up in a hole in the ground, and that there's a spiritual person inside each and every one of us. And if something that I record and present to the world can convince these people that there is more to their life than their phone bill, the electric bill, the job that they go to every day, and that we're all here for a spiritual purpose, then as far as I'm concerned, that's the mission accomplished. And that's why I think paranormal investigation is important, because these people, they go out and they're in search of spirit, but they forget about the spirit that they have within themselves.
Well, I think that's an excellent answer. Now, let me ask you this. You talk about people being spiritually aware, and I thought about this actually during the break. There is such a thing as being spiritually aware, and then such a thing as being superstitious. Yep. They are completely different. With,
well,
you know, with superstition,
the superstitious part.
Yeah, the superstition part is, okay, I'm aware that there's spirits, and I think it means this, and if I don't do this, these spirits are going to do evil things to me, and if I do this, they'll do good things for me. That's the superstition part. You can be spiritually aware without being superstitious.
That's around the world for that. I think we can thank conventional media, we can thank religion, and we can thank Hollywood for the superstitious part, because people have been, you know, programmed to think that this is taboo and that maybe spiritual communication is a sin. But you have to ask yourself, if spiritual communication is a sin, why have you been led to believe that this is true? And the only answer that I can come up with is the fact that what would happen if you were to find out from somebody who has passed over to the other side that what you've been led to believe and been programmed to believe your whole life may not exactly be the case? What implications would that have for various religions, the people who control various religions, and the various agendas that they are putting out across the world and the planet? You know, and I think that that's basically what's going on.
Yeah, it certainly could have some real implications for religion. And let me ask you this now. In all of your investigations, have you run across spirits that were religious?
Yes, absolutely. I actually had a Catholic priest come to me last week. And when you're in Ireland, you always have the fear that, you know, this is a pretty religiously controlled country, and as far as media is concerned and everything like that, and we were expecting hundreds and hundreds of complaints from Ofcom, which is our broadcasting regulator over here. And in two Syria, and this is what lets you know that the world is evolving into another state of consciousness. In 3 years of filming and two series, we have not had one single viewer complaint from anybody across any religious organization. And last week, a Catholic priest came to me and talked to me. I was counseling this guy on various things that he has seen in the monastery that he is in. And many, many of the ghosts and the paranormal accounts that this guy was talking about were former priests, were religious people. And a lot of paranormal accounts are religious.
Have you run into any atheist spirits?
Well, If I have, I haven't known about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's possible that some of the ones that we've recorded could be atheist, and maybe that's the reason why they haven't gone on. But you know, I would think that if somebody is an atheist, the simple fact that, you know, they've passed through the death experience would convince them that, okay, maybe I was a little bit wrong about what I was thinking.
I think there are some atheists that don't think that life ends with physical death. There are some atheists that think that we do have a spirit, but they don't think there is a supreme spirit. There aren't very many, but there are some. But there's a whole bunch of folks who think that when you die, that's it, it's over. We put your body in the ground, we throw some dirt on top of it, stab some flowers into the top of it, and that's it, it's over. And certainly, I think, the instant they die physically, there's got to be that thought in their head, oops, I missed that one.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, the thing about that I found about atheists is very similar to what I found about skeptics. Usually they're not skeptical at all. And if they were skeptical, they certainly wouldn't be coming around with me checking out every haunted location in Ireland. You know, I think they put out this persona that they're skeptical, and they try to act intelligent and try to come up with a logical explanation for everything that's happening around them. But whenever you narrow it down, they're not skeptical at all. And I think a lot of atheists are the same. You know, they don't maybe buy what they've been fed or what they've been told their whole lives. And, you know, at the end of the day, who could blame them? So the only really category that they fall into is the atheist category. But at the end of the day, a lot of atheists that I've met are pretty spiritual people. They just might not be admitting it to themselves yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they may not have yet discovered the difference between being spiritual and being religious. Because I can tell you, I am not religious. And I never have been religious. But I am spiritual. And I know a lot of people, lots of people, who fall into that category. Sometimes people think, because they hear me say I don't believe anything, they think that means that I'm an atheist and I'm, you know, and that's not the case. I just prefer to be able to say either I know that this is true or I know it's not true or I don't know yet. Need more investigation. Mark, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being up so early on your side of the world to be with us this evening.
It's absolutely my pleasure, you know, and it's a breath of fresh air to actually be speaking to somebody and to have a listening and viewing audience of like-minded individuals who are open-minded enough to speak freely about this topic and to look into the different agendas and different realms of our human existence to try to come to some sort of understanding as to, you know, what's happening and what it's all about. And I wish you and your viewers and listeners all the best. And, you know, if anybody wants to talk to me further, they can always find me on Facebook, if you don't mind me giving that address.
Yeah, go ahead. Very quickly, though.
It's facebook.com/spiritvoices, all one word. And, you know, you can be my little internet friend, and we'll talk about ghosts.
All right, stay on the phone with me for just a moment as I bring the Starship in for a landing. That's it, folks. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.